It's time for three stories you should know. While the U.S. women's national soccer team's fight for equal pay continues, we got some data this week on advertising revenue at the 2019 Women's World Cup. And that's where we're going to start. I'm joined by New York Magazine contributing editor Will Leach and by The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello. Thank you, as always.
Thanks so much, Karen. Great to be here.
All right, Rachel, fill us in.
Well, of course, the U.S. women's soccer team won the 2015 World Cup and headed into the 2019 World Cup as the number one team in the world. But advertisers were still very slow to buy into the Women's World Cup broadcast in the U.S. this year. That is, perhaps until the U.S. women made yet another championship run. And the result is that TV ad buyers spent more than double on this Women's World Cup of what earlier estimates were. They spent almost $100 million on ads in the U.S. on broadcasts. But, you know, this reluctance makes me wonder, what will it take for advertisers, sports marketers to go all in on women's sports, especially in an event like this, which attracted 1 billion viewers on television globally? What will it take, guys, for people to go all in on women's sports and embrace them?
Well, I mean, I'm going to guess that a lot of the people that were not going all in on this were men. It's just a guess. But honestly, I think that, like, that's what's going to change, right? It's the game itself is going great. For me, it's baffling to see how you could have not seen the massive personalities and the easily marketable players and the team and not want to jump on that immediately. I don't know how you could have missed that, but actually, I think I have a couple of theories as to people might have missed that, and I think that's probably what's got to change.
Well, here's the thing that always comes to my mind when we talk about this. FIFA bundles the TV deals for men's and women's soccer. So when Fox bought the rights, they got the Men's and Women's World Cup, beach soccer, which I didn't even know existed, futsal, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, and the under 20 and under 17 tournaments. And the implication there is that what Fox was really paying for is the Men's World Cup, and that everything else came for free. This probably made a lot of sense in the beginning when the Women's World Cup was just getting started, and it probably still makes a lot of sense in countries that aren't the U.S. or in Europe. But I also think it kind of sends this message to advertisers that if FIFA doesn't value this airtime, why should we? And this is how women's sports are sold to TV networks in a lot of places. But there is talk going on right now of unbundling the rights for the Women's Super League in Europe. And I think it's time to start thinking about doing it for certain countries, at least in FIFA as well. But those rights have been sold through 2026. So it's going to be a long time before we see anything come of it. Right, Rachel?
I think so. I think FIFA is starting to realize that it's probably under-marketed this event significantly. You could just see in Gianni Infantino, the president of FIFA's final press conference at the Women's World Cup, his eyes were lighting up. It's almost like the dollar signs were appearing, you know, and I think he realizes they need to pay a little more attention to this.
Will, you're up.
All right. Now, before I get on my topic, I feel like I need to say this out front. I am a St. Louis Cardinals fan. The Cardinals have a very real opportunity to make the playoffs for the first time since 2015. And Mariners fans, huh? Yeah, like now we know how you've suffered, right, with our three-year absence. To me, the larger story is really the Chicago Cubs, which is to say the Chicago Cubs are in very serious danger of not only missing the playoffs, but in fact actually tearing the whole kind of thing down. Joe Maddon's contract famously expires at the end of the year. Theo Epstein, the guy that brought the World Series to the Cubs, he's talking, there've been talk that he might leave after the year, even talk that the Cubs might trade Chris Bryant to like get control of their payroll situation. When all the people were writing the names of their loved ones that had never seen the Cubs win the World Series in 2016 on that wall on Waveland Avenue, even my cold, bitter, black Cardinals fan heart was touched by that. But it's worth remembering that, like, that was not supposed to be it. In fact, the Cubs were thought to be a building kind of a dynasty, right? They were supposed to be, the 2016 was just supposed to be the start.
Rachel, are you worried?
Well, I'm not worried. In fact, I would take a very different perspective, and that is that the Cubs are winning, and the Cubs have been winning for decades. And what I mean by that is they are one of the most valuable franchises in MLB.
Yeah.
They are always in the top 5 or 10 in attendance. They basically have created a sort of a perpetual mascot personality within MLB, and this is absolutely brilliant. It seems like Cub games are absolutely impervious to the economy, to how the team is even doing. And it's really quite remarkable. Well, the cheapest ticket I could find to Saturday's game against your Cardinals at Wrigley was $62. I mean, $62, right? The AL Central leading Twins, you can get in there for like $7 or $8. So, I mean, this just shows you the enduring value of the Cubs, regardless of their win-loss record.
You're absolutely right there. I mean, going to a game at Wrigley is just the most fun. It doesn't matter how the team is doing. It's great. You know, Will, when the Cubs finally won the World Series in 2016, I thought we were finally done with the WTF is wrong with the Cubs stories. And you, like, just keep bringing them back. I mean, the Red Sox won the World Series last year, and they're terrible this year. I mean, absolutely awful with the exact same set of guys, same manager. It doesn't make any sense on paper, at least. And do you hear us crying? No, we're not crying. Of course, we had 4 in 15 years, so that maybe isn't fair. But look, the Cubs won in 2016, and that's not that long ago. And don't they get a couple more years to enjoy that success before some Cardinals fan whose team hasn't won since 2011 tells them that the sky is falling?
Garen, I certainly hope that you are not implying that I am somehow, as a Cardinals fan, bringing up how miserable Cubs fans are to a national audience out of any sort of malice. I certainly hope that you're not thinking that. Please.
Oh, I am.
I would never be accused of such things. But it is, I do feel obliged to say, like, Cubs fans certainly thought that 16 was just the beginning.
Yeah.
That was the way it was sold. Even Epstein himself said, we are trying to build a dynasty. I think he actually used the word dynasty. It is not just Cardinals fans pointing out how miserable and sad the Cubs are at this particular moment.
All right. Remember a while back when everyone was freaking out about the fact that NASCAR drivers are actually athletes? Like, people were saying, why do they need to do cardio? All they ever do is turn left. Well, now we understand that good physical fitness is absolutely crucial in motorsports, and apparently it is crucial in chess as well. Aishwarya Kumar recently wrote a piece for ESPN about the physical fitness required to play high-level chess. Now, paying attention to nutrition and fitness in chess is nothing new. A friend sent me an article he wrote for Chess Life back in 2008. But what seems to be new is the science that is supporting it. So researchers say that a chess player can burn up to 6,000 calories a day while playing in a tournament. That's three times what you and I burn sitting at our desks. Chess players lose an average of 2 pounds a day during competitions, which can add up to 10 to 12 pounds over the course of a tournament. And if they haven't properly prepared their bodies for that energy loss, it can really affect their performance. Rachel, what do you make of it?
Well, the numbers are really astounding, the weight loss. But what they really said to me is that maybe we know this sort of intuitively, that you don't necessarily lose weight through exercise alone. You lose it through abject fear and unbridled stress. And that, to me, that's what this says. I mean, to tax your brain that much and to have that level of stress weighing on you for hours and hours on end is an extreme stress on your body. I think I'm glad you mentioned NASCAR drivers because, of course, not only are they concentrating very intently, but they're also losing a lot of water weight. Mm-hmm. Those suits are incredibly hot. So are the cars, of course. It's really quite amazing.
The fact that fitness is inspired by absolute fear and unbridled stress is the explanation why journalists are the best-looking, most attractive people in the perfect physical condition. I think we can all understand that right off the get-go. To me, the best part of that story is not just the stress, but like they talk about the blood pressure and how like the blood pressure goes up and how there's just this physical decline that it does. It's really truly impressive. It has made me not only appreciate chess grandmasters more, it's made me actually want to now sit down and watch a full match and just watch them maybe do something casual and careless, like while I'm talking, like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm eating a sandwich right now, or now, oh, what are you thinking about something too, because we're both just sitting right next to one another.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been the Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman and New York Magazine contributing editor Will Leach. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you very much.
What's it like to scuba dive inside an iceberg?
The ice around us was blue and white and clear, like sometimes like a robin's egg, sometimes like deep turquoise.
That's coming up on Only a Game from NPR.